Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of April 23rd, 2019. And this is episode number 391. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we are live on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. And we're back after a week off, or a little spring break here. And didn't go anywhere. I didn't go to the beach or anything like that, or South Padre Island. No. Not that kind of spring break. Just a spring break just to kind of recoup, relax, and get ready pretty much for the kickoff to summer coming up in a couple of weeks. And I'm sure it's going to get a little busy. It's been getting busy finally on the paranormal news front actually today. And we got a couple of late breaking stories that we're going to talk about. Very late breaking. I mean, I was clattering on the keyboard literally 2 minutes ago, reading some stories that had just fallen into the newswire. So exciting stuff today. We're going to catch up on a couple of stories that have happened over the last couple of weeks as well. And one thing, I didn't take the week off completely. I actually did a show on Friday night leading into Saturday morning. Had to take a nap. And kind of got me in trouble. But I want to thank Dave Scott for having me on his show, Spaced Out Radio, last weekend. It was a great time. It was two and a half hours, but it was a fun conversation. We covered a lot of ground in that amount of time. He's a great host, and I had a lot of fun. It was really just relaxing and just having a conversation, more or less, which is my favorite kind of interview to do. And I enjoy being on that other side of the mic every now and again as well. And I hope everybody out there enjoyed their weekend and their week, and especially the Easter weekend over the weekend. And I hope you had plenty of time to spend with your families as well. And one thing I was reading yesterday and a little bit today as well was the Easter also marked the 42nd anniversary of the Dover demon sighting in Dover, Massachusetts. Some interesting stuff. And that happened back on April 21st, 1977. A 15-year-old kid saw the creature, and then the following night, another 15-year-old also saw the creature. And, of course, that makes it credible. Not really. And, of course, after appearing in local newspapers, the creature became an international story. And I was a little kid in 1977. I wish I was a little bit older to remember all these great stories, all these big events. The 1970s was a huge decade, especially for cryptozoology. And really, it was been a big year for UFOs as well. But I think cryptozoology ruled that decade even more than disco. Ouch. This week's news, like I mentioned, we got a couple of late-breaking stories. We're going to talk a little bit about the Loch Ness Monster, a couple of stories on that. We'll also talk Newsweek, giving credibility to UFO sightings. And there's another story that kind of goes with that. Really interesting stuff. We'll also talk some more UFO stuff, March Mutual UFO Network sighting statistics. We're going to also talk some sad news that happened late last week, Thursday night. Yes, the Ghost Investigation Arena loses another inspiration. And a sad story there. I'm sure everyone's aware of that. We'll talk a little bit about that. We also, Friday night, we were talking about that on Spaced Out Radios. It was kind of a sad moment, and I really wasn't attached to this particular person, but it's still an interesting story, and kind of the way things are going in the paranormal. I don't know. It's just kind of weird, but anyway, one big piece, kind of a little bit of announcement here for the show. I really haven't done a whole lot of new things here for the show lately. And, you know, we talked a few weeks ago about Google Plus. Can we call it Google Minus now? Google Plus social media platform officially shut down, closed its doors for good. Well, at least for most of us. And I pondered if I was going to use another social media model outside of Facebook, which I do have Facebook / Paranews Insider, as well as Twitter at Paranews Insider, especially since I didn't really use Google Plus. Plus, I knew it was going away. They had told us many, many months ago that it was gone. It was just a matter of time. And pretty much the day it went under, I couldn't even get in there. Now all the links are gone off of everywhere to get in there. So yeah, it's officially dead. They're kind of using it for some business platforms. But yeah, all the personal private ones are gone. All of our content is slowly being erased, but I can't even get in there. And Twitter, you know, it's, I don't know, Facebook and Twitter, they both have their own strengths and weaknesses, and they seem like they have a different kind of crowd for each one. I'd say overall, the majority of people are on Facebook, but Twitter seems to get the punch across to people that you're really focusing on, but not as large of an audience. I don't know. It's just me. So that's why I use both. And again, I mentioned Facebook / Paranews Insider, and Twitter is at Paranews Insider. And like I mentioned, I didn't use Google Plus that much. I kind of gave up on it. Nobody ever really responded or liked anything that I put on there anyway. So I just really figured it was dying. And yeah, I mean, there's comments I'm reading here in the chat room here that there's a lot more hate on Twitter. I think the reason for that is, I don't know. I mean, they're both Facebook and Twitter are instant responses, but it's almost like you're having a conversation with Twitter. So people get a little bit more fired up, I think, about things. Whereas, I mean, realistically, it's the same kind of comment thing, but it's the same kind of stuff I remember seeing on message boards many, many years ago. People are a lot braver behind a keyboard than they are in real life and don't really talk to total strangers that way. But seemingly behind a keyboard, you think you know somebody based on a couple of words. So I don't know. That's just me. But one thing I have noticed recently, especially with the younger folks, is that Instagram seems to be a popular place right now. And I've had a personal page on there and talked to a lot of people through that personal page, and it my personal page just kind of became a little bit too me. So I didn't really want to put that for the show, but I did decide to create a page just for the Paranormal News Insider on Instagram. Yes, it's mostly for pictures and videos, and it's kind of taken the place of a couple of other now dead social media platforms, but it's getting a large following. A lot of people are following Instagram, so I felt like, you know, I got to reach out. I got to do it. So just search for Paranews Insider, or you can go to Instagram.com/ Paranews Insider, and I'll be posting pictures on there of some updates or some things that, especially events. I think I'm going to use that for that a lot, especially when I go to events. Be uploading some photographs from all that, and instead of using my personal Instagram page, which that's a little bit more baseball stuff than cryptid and anything else. But yeah, MySpace has been gone for quite a while. Well, they're not really gone, but personal MySpace pages have been flushed years ago, and MySpace is basically just for musicians at this point. Yeah, I used MySpace. People fighting over my top 8 all the time. I can't believe that. MySpace, yes. There for a while, MySpace was the largest social media platform. Nobody used Facebook. Facebook seems silly, and it was for children. I think it's kind of the same thing nowadays. Anyway, I spent a little time updating my events listing on the ParanewsInsider.com website. So, added a few, and trying to keep up with the calendar. But again, if you see anything on there that you know, and I know you know, there's some stuff going on in your neck of the woods that you want to see on that list or you want to hear about here on the show, let me know. Insider at Paranews Insider. If you still do email, is that old-fashioned? I don't know. I'm getting old. I don't know what these kids do these days. They do use email or any of this other stuff. Heck, we used passenger pigeons back in my day. No, we didn't. But yeah, insider at paranewsinsider.com. You go to the website, paranewsinsider.com. There's also a contact form right there. Again, you can get a hold of me through various things of social media to let me know about your event. And what I want to talk about really quick here is the Summer Haunt Fest 2019 taking place on June 21st in Cayuga, Indiana, at the Willow's Weep House. That looks like a really good time. John Zaffis, David Weatherly, David Spinks, and a lot of other speakers are going to be there as well. You can check that out on Facebook. So search for the Summer Haunt Fest 2019. And let's see, I do have that link. I can throw that in the chat room, maybe. We'll see. Hopefully it doesn't land on anyone. And yeah, do definitely check this out. Now, Cayuga is in, let's see, it's on the western edge of Indiana, kind of central Indiana. So it's close to Illinois. So if you're in that area, yeah, you can find that event. So that's in the chat room there. So if you're in the chat room, yeah, you get a sneak peek at some of the links of some of these stories that I'll be talking about. And not always the most popular link that you're going to find out there on the internet if you Google it. And also some pictures that I'll share during this show as well through that. For me, gosh, this is coming up really quick. Gosh, 2 weeks away. I better finish my presentation. May 3rd through the 4th, I will be appearing at the Haunted Heights Paracon 2019 in Houghton Lake, Michigan. And my topic is going to be on UFOs and UFO research and investigation methods. I'll be the only speaker on UFOs. So a majority of people there are on the ghost topics. There is one cryptozoologist. That's why I volunteered to talk about UFOs. So I kind of look at my stuff, like UFO research, in the eyes of the ghost investigator a little bit to kind of compare and contrast how things are similar or different. It's going to be an interesting take. And at the end of that month, I will be appearing at the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure, which takes place May 31st through June 2nd at the Benner's Meadow Run Campground in Farmington, Pennsylvania. And if you don't have your tickets, you better hurry. There's not that many left. Tickets once sold out, that's it. You will not be able to get in at the door at the campground. Forget it. It's done. It's going to be a packed house. I can't wait for this. This is going to be a lot of fun. I mean, just getting to hang out with the 12 and a half speakers, or I should say the other 11 and a half speakers, is going to be a lot of fun for me. These are some people, some of them I haven't seen in a while. Some I've seen a few times in the last couple of years since this event took place. But a lot of old friends. And I do consider them friends and colleagues as well. Ron Murphy, Steve Coles, Dave Dragason, Rick Fisher, Stan Gordon, Jay Bachochin is going to be there with his son Blake, debuting his new movie, Finding Jay. All these guys, good friends of mine. And other speakers, Paul G. Johnson, Dave Spinks, Dave Weatherly, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, as well as the 2017 Cryptozoologist of the Year, Seth Breedlove. And that's a great lineup right there. Fantastic lineup. But there's more. You're also going to have celebrity guests, such as the guys from the Appalachian Investigators of Mysterious Sightings, or Ames. In other words, the guys from the Mountain Monsters television show making their second straight appearance. You're also going to have Bill Brock, host of the television show Monsters Underground. Ken Gerhard will be there. Dr. Jeff Meldrum, Cliff Berrickman of Finding Bigfoot, Stacy Brown Jr., And gosh, I think that might be it. There might be more. I don't know. It's crazy how many people are going to be here. It's just insane. And it will be the adventure of a lifetime. And I don't know. It's definitely, like I've said in years past, it's going to be intense in more ways than one. It's very intense, and we're going to be intense. So it's interesting. The campground is actually right at the end of the at the street when you go up in toward the campground. It's Fort Necessity Battlefield is right across the street. Kind of cool. There's a casino down the road. There's a lot of state game lands around the area, and right near Ohio Pile. And if you've ever heard of Falling Water, the Frank Lloyd Wright crafted home, it's in pictures. I'm sure you've seen it. If you saw a picture of it, you'd know. That is pretty close to the area that we're going to be in as well. Lots of state game lands all over the place. So not really a state park, state forest. There is a couple of state forests close. There's a couple in West Virginia, but we're really near the whole mountain range. Especially Chestnut Ridge area, where numerous Bigfoot sightings have happened. As a matter of fact, the campground itself has had Bigfoot sightings in the past. So, really interesting event. And yes, I did say Dave Spinks. Dave Spinks will be there. Looking forward to that. Gosh, it's going to be such a huge event. But unfortunately for me, I recently found out a couple of weeks ago, it was confirmed that I have an event I have to go to on Sunday. That's dealing with baseball stuff. And people are like, whoa, you're going to miss this event for a baseball game? Yeah, well, I'm playing actually at Progressive Field on that Sunday. So I'm going to have to duck out of there as late as I can Saturday night and drive 3.5 hours home to get home in time to go to that. But anyway, you didn't want to hear about that. I personally have some other events coming up, but this weekend there's a couple of cryptid events. I've got nothing else on the ghost calendar or nothing else on the UFO calendar, but in cryptid we have the Georgia Bigfoot Conference 2019 taking place April 26th and April 27th in Clayton, Georgia. And apparently that event is sold out from what I read earlier today on Facebook, but fear not. Rumor has it that they're going to do another event in October. I don't know if it's true. I read it on Facebook, so it's probably true. And this weekend as well, April 26th through the 28th in Portland, Maine, we have the fourth annual International Cryptozoology Conference, of course, held by Lauren Coleman, who operates the International Cryptozoology Conference up there in Portland, Maine. So a couple of big events happening this weekend, but it's all well and good. But we got some news to attend to, and man, the show's almost half over. So fear not. We're going to jump into some news, and we have some Loch Ness Monster stories. It's back. It is back. Not once, not twice, but thrice. Three times a monster. Rory Cameron, a 36-year-old managing director at a bakery, states that he saw something strange in the loch back on April 11th, and the object, whatever he saw, creature, created an area of wake around it. He did manage to capture video of the incident, which is exciting, but it's only 19 seconds long, and the video was shot from very far away, almost like a continent away. And it's pretty much impossible to tell exactly what caused the waves. The sighting occurred near the Urquhart Castle, which is a very popular destination for visitors, and seemingly also the Loch Ness Monster seems to hang out there quite a bit as well. While many people have told him it's probably just a boat, he denies this. He says, no way, it can't be a boat. The boat would have to be minuscule, and there would have to be he said that. That's a quote. So, quote, minuscule. And there would have to be, quote, water coming out of the back, unquote. Both of these statements are not true, and it very well could have been a boat. I don't know what he means. So you're saying the Loch Ness Monster is ginormous, like size of a cruise ship? Because I don't know. Water coming out of the back. I don't know what kind of boat you're riding on. That sounds a little scary to me. And again, the detail is nearly impossible to make out as he is so far away from the action with his phone. You know, I get it. We all have our phones all the time. But if you're going to take something of the Loch Ness Monster, if you're going to go to the Loch to see the Loch Ness Monster, you're going to go to Loch Ness, take a better camera. Take some binoculars. Take a telescope. Take something that you can see stuff better. I mean, it's ridiculous now. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. I'm not gonna beat around the bush here. Some of these things, I just don't get it. Get a binoculars. I do have a picture of his video. So here's a screen cap. I'm going to throw in the chat room that you're going to see this awesome picture. Look at all this detail. There it is. The Loch Ness Monster live. Right there on my video. Now I get it. Loch Ness Monster is a large expansive area, and anywhere around it, it's very hilly surrounding the loch. It's a long, thin area of water. And what happens here with this is wind really plays havoc on a body of water like this. It makes it do strange things. If you've ever seen a fjord, sometimes water acts strange in fjords as well. I've seen one up in Maine. There's only one really on the eastern coast of the United States, but they act really strange. The water, when the wind goes through, it can create these waves, these wakes, that goes through by kind of the burst, the way that the air flows through valleys and things like that. I think that's what we might be seeing, but I'm pretty sure that's probably a little boat. He just couldn't see it or hear it because he's so far away with that potato taking video. And yeah, I don't know. Interesting stuff. And I do have a link for that as well. I'll throw that in the chat room if you want to read all about Rory Cameron. And interestingly enough, it's official. This sighting is now official as a Loch Ness Monster sighting. As it's in the books. You may wonder, well, what does that mean? Yes, it's in the books. It's official. Gary Campbell has made it official. Gary Campbell is the keeper of the register of sightings at the website LochNessSightings.com. So if he says it's official, it's official. I'm sure he's getting interviews. I don't know if he's getting paid for it, but I'm sure people are paying for the story. But United Kingdom is infamous for peddling and pushing a lot of these paranormal stories, and people will get a little check. Probably not a big check, but hey, 20 bucks is 20 bucks, or however many pounds that is. I'd like to line my pocket with some pounds. Not those kind of pounds. I got enough pounds around my waist, but you know what I mean. Money is money. And speaking of the Loch Ness Monster, this next Loch Ness Monster story starts out in a pub. Probably not the best area to start a story about the Loch Ness Monster, but the story provides some proof. Well, not proof. Not proof of the Loch Ness Monster. Not exactly. I guess kind of, sort of. Proof how strong social media can be in solving mysteries is really the big proof here. So on Thursday, April 18th, Jackie Shepherd and her husband were sitting in the Little Harp pub staring off into the Bristol Channel when Jackie suddenly spotted what she felt was the Loch Ness Monster swimming in the loch. That was actually coming toward them. Well, not actually in the loch. It was in the Bristol Channel. And the Bristol Channel, this is it's a large expanse of water. It's kind of in the Atlantic Ocean near the Celtic Sea. And if you're looking at a map of England, it kind of cuts into that southern part of England, the southwest part. It's kind of like an inlet area. And really and truly, it's about 550 miles south of Loch Ness. So maybe the Loch Ness Monster drove down there. Maybe he was on vacation. He took spring break and went down to a little warmer water. Maybe. I don't know. But not only did Jackie see this creature, her husband as well spotted this thing in the water. And also the table next to them did as well. So again, this happened in the Little Harp Pub, which is located in Clevedon, not Cleveland, Clevedon, England, which is, again, about 550 miles. It's about a 550-mile drive to south of Loch Ness from this area. So not that the Loch Ness Monster can drive. At least that's what we're led to think anyway. The Bristol Channel, again, is a large area of water that cuts into the southwest part of England. If you're looking at a map, it looks like it's, you know, this little triangle of water that goes in there. So Jackie spots this creature, and it seems to be moving toward the docks. Why she didn't get a picture of it with her potato phone is that the light was fading as it was near dusk, so she was unable to get a photo of what she saw. Okay, that's good. I'm glad she realized this limitation and didn't try it and try to get her story published. Well, she got her story published anyway without a picture. That's pretty impressive. Apparently, it wasn't a huge deal until the weekend when she sought help in finding the couple that sat next to her and her husband, as well as for anyone else in the Clevedon area that might have seen the creature by reaching out to, where else, Facebook. And she reached the Hello Clevedon Facebook page where she shared her experience. And some of the responses were not really family-friendly. There was a lot of people that were offering rational explanations, but there was no reply by the people that sat next to her. And she explained that she was the designated driver that evening, so she'd not been drinking alcohol. But there was a response by someone else who actually had seen this object. So there's some validation here. And Allie Robertson chimed in and said she had seen it as well. And she did one of the most amazing things I think I've ever heard in any one of these stories about the Loch Ness Monster. In the multiple years, 10 years of plus, I've been covering these stories about this. I've been reading about it. I have one of your first books on the Loch Ness Monster. The most amazing thing that's ever happened. I just mentioned it a few years ago or a few minutes ago. She went to get a pair of binoculars to see the object a little closer. And this is what happens when you do these things. This is what Allie Robertson said. She said, quote, "It was a large piece of wood. We saw it go up and down the estuary with the tide. It was large enough for some gulls to take up residence. We looked through binoculars," unquote. Amazingly, Jackie actually took this explanation as validation of what she had seen and that it was definitely misidentification. Now, this reaction is, that's another amazing thing. Other than the binoculars, someone actually took a logical explanation as fact, and instead of arguing, no, I know what I saw. I saw the Loch Ness Monster. Usually people overreact and get all excited. But this is a really wonderful, warm story. I feel really good about this. And I'm glad that somebody came forward and said what they saw. And the person actually took it as an explanation. It's wonderful. And she didn't whip out the iPhone and try to film it from a mile away. All right, so a late-breaking story published just a few hours ago. This is fresh, hot off the presses. Kind of burned my hand, and I did sniff the page a little bit. This story may help to shed a little bit of light as to where the Loch Ness Monster may have come from. Researchers from the University of St. Andrews have put together their own hypothesis as to why claims of the Loch Ness Monster and other similar long-necked creatures began in the 1930s. Well, the save you some a little bit of trouble here. The short end of the story, basically, is that the Heavy reports of the Loch Ness Monster soared in relation to the number of dinosaurs that became available to be viewed in museums across Britain. These newer dinosaur specimens differed from earlier finds, giving us a glimpse at what we now know as dinosaurs versus what was pretty well known prior to that. Most of these animals were described as snake-like creatures, very slow and not very exciting. Wouldn't have made a very good movie like Jurassic Park. That would have been very unexciting, lazy creatures, barely able to move. So interestingly, as these snake-like dinosaurs diminished from museums, they also noticed that the reports of sea serpents began to dwindle. So maybe there's a little correlation here. They do plenty of research, and I kind of can't wait to get my hands. Hopefully I can get a hold of this research and read it in depth instead of somebody else's interpretation of it. The article in question here points out, it says, quote, the researchers looked through 1,688 historical reports, including books, newspaper accounts, and firsthand testimonies going back hundreds of years, of 1,543 sightings, omitting obvious hoaxes, unquote. And this research was published in the Journal of Earth Sciences History. And I'm guessing maybe this could be some pretty big news moving forward in the next couple of days. Like I said, it just broke a couple of hours ago. So it's pretty late over there in the United Kingdom. And if you're listening live, I really appreciate you over there in the United Kingdom. And if you're not listening in the United Kingdom, well, I still appreciate you for tuning in live here on the show. And if you're not listening live, well, you know what? Nah, just kidding. I do appreciate you as well. So that's your cryptid roundup for the week. Lots of Loch Ness Monster. I always think that it's going to just go away. We had a period of time there. No Loch Ness Monster stories all year, except for the fact that the Loch Ness Monster had not been seen or heard from. Now here it is. A bunch of stories all together. But we're going to move to UFO news. And really, one of the best articles I've read on UFOs in quite a while. It was in Newsweek. Yes, Newsweek. Newsweek published an interesting article on UFOs. In the article, Newsweek attempts to rank the famous sightings as far as their potential for credibility. The article is titled, The Most Credible UFO Sightings and Encounters in Modern History According to Research. And it uses a scale that they created using J. Allen Hynek's work as a foundation. The list and scale is also put together with the help of the Scientific Coalition of Ufology. The coalition was started in 2017 and is composed of 45 ufologists. Most of them either have backgrounds in science, the military, or law enforcement. And the group has 11 PhDs between them and has members from NASA and from the European Space Agency. According to the article, the Newsweek credibility scale works like this. It says, quote, the credibility scale works on a point-based system. 1 point is given for sightings with multiple witnesses, another for an expert witness, such as a pilot, air traffic controller, military, or government official. 1 point is awarded for picture evidence and an additional point for film of a moving UFO. Unidentified flying objects can often be explained away as foreign aircraft, so an additional point is given for UFOs seen to be flying in a manner inconsistent with flights as humans know it. Hynek also prized close encounters. Close encounters of the first kind, sightings of an object less than 500 feet away, are given 1 point. Close encounters of the second kind, a UFO event where a physical effect is felt, such as a car light breaks, extreme heat is felt, scorch marks on the ground, these are given 2 points. Finally, close encounters of the third kind, instances where an animated pilot is seen, earn 3 points. A system for removing points has also been incorporated to account for cases where military or government bodies have discredited the sightings. 3 points are removed in these cases as the baseline for credibility in the scale begins at 3. So keep that in mind. It starts at 3. And that's an unquote there. The first case they examine is the Roswell case. The July 1947 crash is probably the most famous one of the United States, if not the world. However, due to high potential for misinformation and the fact that the government has spent time and effort to rid of itself of this story by pushing information to the public, actually earned Roswell a negative 2 credibility rating. My big thing about that story is it was supposedly caused by a thunderstorm, knocked the UFO out of the sky, which is crazy when you think about it. A UFO can travel vast distances through outer space, all the crazy things that happen out there, and a silly little lightning bolt knocks it out of the sky. Not to mention, there was not a thunderstorm, not that night, not even that week in the area. Ouch. Anyway, the June 1947 UFO sighting by Kenneth Arnold near Mount Rainier in Washington is the sighting that kind of started the modern-day pursuit and interest in UFOs. And most books, even mine that I wrote on UFOs, start out by talking about Kenneth Arnold. Despite Arnold's claims and detail of the sighting, an Air Force investigation threw the sighting out, and it actually lands with a 0 credibility rating in the article. What about the July 1952 Washington, D.C. UFO flap? Includes two incidents where UFOs were seen on radar as well as visually, and jets were scrambled to intercept. You probably saw that on that TV show recently, right? Okay. The incident was eventually explained away as temperature inversion, which tricked the radar operators, but still landed in this article with a credibility rating of 3. And the April 2013 video of a UFO over the Rafael Hernandez Airport runway in Aguadilla, Puerto Rico, scored the highest on the list with a credibility rating of 6. The incident was captured by a U.S. Customs and Border Patrol, U.S. Border Protection aircraft. The video was analyzed by a number of officials, and no explanation has been given, at least officially. Although the crew was using the equipment for the first time, and many others have analyzed this footage and discovered it to be nothing more than a bird. A pelican, to be exact. And, I feel really weird about this because there was a 161-page report by the Scientific Coalition for Ufology, and they said that they concluded unanimously, no explanation. But I tell you, I can prove it's a pelican too. If you watch the video, I don't know how they missed it. This is weird. Anyway, two other aircraft videos released since the government's admittance to the Advanced Aviation Threat Identification Program are also on the 25 event list, which are the USS Nimitz Tic Tac UFO incident and the 2015 Hornet fighter jet footage, which is nicknamed Go Faster. That one is a really interesting one as well. And I will definitely, I forgot to put the other two crypto links in the chat room, but I'm definitely going to put this one in here because it's a pretty big list. There's a lot of stories in here. Like I mentioned, 25 different cases they analyzed. They didn't really, these are just popular stories. They didn't do anything that was involved with any other crashes, which is weird. They only chose the one crash, but no abductions at all. I guess because it's just a personal account, there's nothing else to really look at. And speaking of UFO reports, we have the March Mutual UFO Network sighting statistics. I know we're almost in May already, but this is decent timing. The March Mutual UFO Network sighting statistics. Last year, in March, there was 640 total reports And this was the highest number of reports since 684 back in 2015 for the month of March. Well, this year, MUFON turned in 580 total worldwide reports, so 80 less than last year. That's not good. This was close to 2017, actually, which produced 584 reports. And I was kind of thinking it'd be a lot higher with Project Blue Book being on television, which you just mentioned. But no, apparently not. Of these 580 worldwide reports, 400 came from the United States. The next highest amount of reports came from the United Kingdom with 54. Canada had 32. France had 14. Australia turned in 10. India had 9. Germany had 7. And Mexico had 5. There were 33 other countries that turned in 4 or less reports, with 23 of them only turning in one report each. Now, of the 400 U.S. reports, 43 came from California, which led the way. And I always say this, but as it should. California is number one in population, so statistically, it should be the highest, with the highest amount of people in that state. Of course, they should. 40 came from Florida. Texas had 22. Michigan turned in 20. Arizona had 18. Illinois had 17. Washington State had 16. New York and Ohio had 14 each. Massachusetts and Missouri had 13 each. Colorado had 11. Pennsylvania and North Carolina had 10 each. And New Jersey and Nevada had 9 apiece. And I like to do the whole kind of breaking things down per capita, which is always in fractions. You know, I do it per 100,000 people per state. So California, the number one state as far as population is concerned, according to the statistics. They also were number one in the number of sightings at 43. And if you do the math, the per capita, so per 100,000, was a 0.109 per capita. So, yeah, not very good. 10% of a person. Basically, Florida, number three in state population. They were number two in cases reported with 40, and they finished with a 0.188. And then we go to Missouri, number 18 in state population. They had 13 sightings. They finished with a 0.212 per capita. Arizona, number 14 in state population, 0.251. And they had 18 sightings. West Virginia, number 38, a 0.277 with only 5 sightings. Vermont, number 49 in state population. They had a 0.319 per capita with 2 sightings. New Mexico, 36th in state population, a 0.382 with 8 sightings. Alaska, number 48. In state population, a 0.407 with their whopping 3 sightings. And Wyoming is number 50 in state population, and they finished with the highest per capita, 0.519. So roughly over one person every 200,000 people, I guess, saw, or I should say reported, a UFO in the month of March. And that's there are 3 cases that they had. So again, this is only in that month. These sightings could have taken place years ago, months ago, weeks ago. They were just reported in that month. And one last UFO story I want to talk about really quick. It's actually a late breaking story. And I just saw this literally minutes before I came on the air. And this is definitely one you're going to be hearing about the next couple of days. The government is going to start recognizing UFO cases. I know, this is mind-blowing, mind-boggling, and it's true. I read it on the internet. It has to be true. The U.S. Navy is finalizing some paperwork and soon to be having this information out, talking about designating unexplained sightings. You know, a lot of times they get these things from these reports and they just toss them out. Well, this doesn't make sense. This is not in line with our technology. And they basically just flush the data. It's true. They admitted it. So now they're going to be looking at this. And the other part of it is they don't usually know where to go. Who do we talk to? Who do we send this stuff to? So they're finalizing some information here. And this is good. I think this is good news. This could be one of the top stories that we cover on UFOs in a long time. And they mentioned, they say, quote, if you're in a busy airport and see something, you're supposed to say something. And this was Luis Elizondo, the former Pentagon official who ran the AATIP. He says, also, with our own military members, it's kind of like the opposite. If you do see something, don't say something. And this has been a big problem. This is what's kept a lot of our stuff from really being discovered. And, you know, I just talked about some of the top 25 cases that were analyzed by Newsweek with their credibility scale. And the two top winners of that were stuff that was given by the government. So who knows what else they've had or flushed. But hopefully going forward, they're going to start documenting all this stuff. And, you know, part of it, it's not because they're thinking that these are definitely UFOs driven by aliens, but, you know, it's concerning about what maybe we don't know about other countries or other technology. Just because we don't have it doesn't mean it's not out there. And it says here, what happens in 5 years if this turns out to be an extremely advanced Russian aircraft? I mean, we can't take it for granted. We can't take it that we know everything that's in the sky. And this is great for potential UFO finds as well, you know, as far as unidentified flying aircraft. Yeah, this is late-breaking information, so I really haven't digested it or quickly read through it right before the show. But it's really interesting that they're going to be they've been doing some studies, they spent some money looking at all this stuff, and they've decided to kind of come up with some new designations to some of this tech that they see out there in the skies. So this is good stuff here. So looking forward to kind of dissecting that, seeing what happens really when this splashes in the news pretty soon. I think it's going to be a big story. And we'll see how far this carries through the media. Ghost news. I want to talk about this. Obviously, this is a big story. Probably the biggest ghost story we've had in a long time. And last year, this is kind of one of my first thoughts when I heard the story kind of breaking on Friday afternoon of last week. I remember back on Friday, April 13th, of last year, we lost the great radio personality Art Bell. It was a big day, a very sad news for a lot of people, and it just sent shockwaves through throughout not just the paranormal community, but the entertainment industry, the radio industry. It was just amazing how far wide Art Bell reached, and it was a pretty big story last year. But sad news again this week. Just weird. I just was thinking about Art because it was, you know, a year ago. And you may have heard about this news that Lorraine Warren passed away last Thursday evening at age 92. So a lot of people were like actually happy for her. I mean, yeah, 92, that's quite the accomplishment. And yeah, it wasn't ghosts that did her in. So yeah, you can do this. You can battle demons and ghosts and live to a ripe old age. So let that be a lesson to you. A few family members let the information out slowly through social media, and numerous news stations began carrying the story by Friday afternoon. And if you don't know who Lorraine Warren is, well, her and her late husband, Ed, led a number of high-profile paranormal investigations, such as the story of the Lutz family, which became known as, well, in print, in books, and eventually movies, as the Amityville Horror. And they were not that kind of horror. H-O-R-R-O-R. Get your mind out of the gutter. They were also investigators behind the cases that inspired the Conjuring movies, which are of late. And Ed and Lorraine, well, they claim to have investigated over 10,000 cases in their career together. That's quite a few, and that's like five a day. That's a lot. They also founded the New England Society for Psychic Research in 1952. And like a lot of people out there, it was interesting to kind of hear a lot of people talking about Lorraine, and they've met him at a paranormal convention, and people, you know, trading stories about that. And I was also fortunate to have met Lorraine back in 2010 at a convention that I was speaking at Sharpsville, Pennsylvania. She was a very nice person. And it truly was an honor to meet her. I may not agree with a lot of stuff that she's done or said or the cases involved, but she still was a very nice person. And I don't know. There's really not a whole lot for me to say about my meeting her. But I was also fortunate. I do want to mention that good friends. I still consider myself good friends. I haven't talked to them in a while. I was a co-host on a radio show, the actual show that started the program here, the Paranormal News Insider, which was called the Dark Grand Dark Conspiracy back in the day, and it changed itself to Darkest Hours Late Night there towards the end. And that was demonologist Dave Considine. He and I shared co-hosting duties with the host of the show, Dan Bouts. And Dave and I, you know, we're opposite ends of the spectrum here. He is, you know, demonologist. He was actually personally trained by Ed and Lorraine. And me, I was trained by science and logical thought. And you would think that the two of us would butt heads. But we get along like little kids. I mean, we had a lot of stuff in common. And our goals are the same. Helping people, empowering people, giving their lives back. So, you know, Dave taught me a lot about that other end of the spectrum, and made me kind of I respect who as far as I'm willing to do with that end of that spectrum. But he's a fantastic guy, and you know, my thoughts are with him because I know he's really hurting right now to lose Lorraine after all this time, and also the family member of Lorraine Warren and anyone else that were associated with her. You are in my thoughts. And one of the most loved ghost investigation television shows of all time, well, you know it. It's the Sci-Fi Network's Ghost Hunters. Now, that's the one that started it all. That's what people say anyway, that Ghost Hunters started the whole ghost investigation thing. That's not really true. Ghost hunting was pretty popular. And the show was a reaction to that popularity. It was really hard to gauge that because the internet was growing at the time. And there were plenty of ghost shows on TV prior to Ghost Hunters, but nothing with a basically grassroots group, like a pair of plumbers going out there. And they were just kind of like a lot of us that were out there. So that's why a lot of us latched onto it. I didn't. I wasn't a big fan. I was out actually investigating. I wasn't watching TV. But anyway, you know, a lot of people modeled themselves after this show, and a lot of people, after a season or two got on DVD, were definitely modeling themselves after this show. I mean, really, it is a good thing because it did bring a lot of great people into this field as well. When you get a lot of people flowing in, it's a good thing. But, I mean, there were some bad things that happened along with that. I'm not going to get in too far into depth with that, I guess. But the show ended in 2016. That's a long run for a TV show. And a lot of other shows have attempted to fill the void with very little success. Well, The Travel Channel has just recently announced that it will have a new series coming soon called Ghost Nation. And it will star Jason Hawes, Steve Gonsalves, Dave Tango, and I think that's it. Those three, the big three. The show will purportedly surround these three former ghost hunters. I guess they're still ghost hunters, but you know what I mean. They were on the show. Taps guys. You can call them Taps, I guess. As they team up with a variety of ghost groups and go on investigations. Kind of sounds like Scooby-Doo. We'll see. We'll see how that... it's going to be interesting to see how the show will affect the culture of ghost investigation, if it has any dent at all, and how well this will do in the ratings. And we'll see also how it kind of swirls the ranks of ghost groups out there and see what pops up. My thought with this, it's almost like, are they trying to pass the torch? So they're trying to get other groups in here to kind of give them their 15 minutes to see maybe who can rise to the top. I don't know. I know Ghost Adventures tried that years ago with a paranormal-based competition show. I don't think it did very well, and it caused a lot more problems in the paranormal field than it did any good. There is no word on when this show will debut, but from the sound of it, the show may be on TV by this fall. And quickly, one last little thing. Don't worry, it won't take long. This is groundbreaking information as well that was seen floating around social media in the last couple of days. It's supposed to be a big deal, but it's not. Apparently, the word cryptid was finally added to Webster's Dictionary. This is a big deal. Everyone's all talking about this. This is great. And cryptid, along with 640 other buzzwords. I guess cryptid is a buzzword. I don't know. That was a classification designation. Anyway, including snowflake, bug out bag, and even unplug. Unplug as it pertains to getting away from social media, apparently. So yay, cryptid, finally in the Webster's Dictionary. But cryptid was actually in the Oxford Dictionary in 2016. At the latest. Could have been in there before. Yikes. But at least they got it right. Cryptid is was coined in 1983 by cryptozoologist J.E. Wall in the summer issue of the International Society of Cryptozoology newsletter. So at least they got the coined year right. But yeah, it was around a lot longer than that. Anyway, hopefully I'll be around a little longer. But we will be back next week. We're not taking another week off. Don't worry. We'll be back. Seems like I've taken a lot of time off lately, but it's worth it for the mind. Sometimes the voice, a little bit. But anyway, I will see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.